The redistricting committee will come to order. DJ, please call the roll.
Chair Leek.
Here.
Vice Chair Fine.
Here.
Ranking Member Geller.
Here.
Representatives Andrade has been excused. Avila.
Here.
Bush.
Here.
Byrd.
Here.
Clemens.
Here.
Drake.
Yes.
Driscoll.
Here.
Goff Marcil.
Here.
Brawl.
Here.
Grant.
Here.
Jenny.
Here.
Latvala.
Here.
Mariano.
Here.
Umfroy. Umfroy. Payne.
Here.
Robinson.
Here.
Rommel.
Here.
Saroy.
Here.
Slosberg. Slosberg. Thompson.
Here.
Tuck.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, DJ. Members, a few reminders before we begin. Please silence all electronic devices, and if you wish to make a public comment and did not fill out a form online before the meeting, please fill out a form and turn it into the Sergeant's Office staff, please. Also, as a reminder for our members and presenters, please ensure that you turn your microphone on when you are speaking, and for the new folks, please turn it off when you are finished. All right, folks, as we say in my neck of the woods, you know, racers, start your engines. So here we go. This is going to feel a little bit like redistricting 101, and we're going to spend the time to educate our folks so that we have the best opportunity to make the best decisions in the most compliant manner. And so here we go. Members, redistricting is a once-in-a-decade process. I'm honored that Speaker Sprouse has entrusted me with this responsibility to serve as chair of the redistricting committee, and I look forward to working with each of you throughout this process. I would like to first and foremost introduce Vice Chair Fine and Ranking Member Geller, who will be my partners in spearheading this process. Thank you. I'd also like to recognize a few members who serve on this committee as well as lead our subcommittees. Leading the Congressional Redistricting Subcommittee are Chair Saroy and Vice Chair Tuck. The State Legislative Redistricting Subcommittee will be led by Chair Byrd and Vice Chair Robinson. I would now like to introduce the redistricting staff. Team, please raise your hand when I call your name. Our staff director is Lita Kelly. Policy analysts are Kyle Langan and Sam Wagoner. Jason Pareda is our chief map drawer. Karen Dearden is the external affairs chief. And DJ Ellerkamp is our administrative assistant. As you look around at your fellow committee members and those of our subcommittees, you will realize that we have over 50% of the House, 62 members, involved in this committee process as a whole. We also have all corners of the state represented, all the way from the Panhandle to Northeast Florida, to the I-4 corridor, to South Florida and the Keys. Urban and rural areas are both represented. Education is going to be our key to success here. The last time we met on the House map was in 2012. When I say we, I mean the royal we is in the House. Fast forward 10 years and the vast majority of the House is new to redistricting, including myself, so I want to start by giving some context. While the House map was constitutionally upheld in 2012, there were successful court challenges to both the congressional and Senate plans throughout the subsequent years. It is important to remember that during the 2012 redistricting cycle, the members and staff were implementing two brand new, substantial constitutional amendments. They did not have the benefit of historical reference or court precedents to guide them through this process. However, now we do. The Speaker and I have made it consistently and abundantly clear that the House will conduct this process in compliance with the Florida Constitution and relevant federal and state legal standards, including relevant court precedent. Let me read that again. The Speaker and I have made it consistently and abundantly clear that the House will conduct this process in compliance with the Florida Constitution and relevant federal and state legal standards, including relevant court precedent. Now, I want to point out, only five members in our entire chamber were part of the last redistricting cycle, and only three of them were in the House. That creates a noteworthy responsibility for our committees to undertake a thorough educational effort to ensure that everyone has the understanding they need to be able to propose, analyze, and most importantly, vote on legally compliant boundaries. Throughout our initial committee meetings this fall, we are going to build this foundational knowledge for members of the committees, including such things as methodologies that guide how we can draw and analyze districts, and the related policy decisions that we will face as we draw the debate boundary lines. This committee's first lesson beginning today with an explanation of redistricting terminology and an overview of the U.S. Census Bureau. We will also demonstrate for you the newly launched FloridaRedistricting.gov website that contains resources for you and your constituents and every person in the state of Florida. In subsequent committee weeks, we will train members in our map drawing software. The training will teach members how to use the software to draw districts, how to use the reporting tools to analyze what you drew, and how to activate the advanced tools within the software to make drawing as efficient as possible. We will also provide members with an understanding of the legal landscape surrounding redistricting. This landscape will be true to established law, not third-party interpretation. And then, once the foundational understanding is established across our committees, we will begin workshopping maps. Let's read that again. Only then, once the foundational understanding is established across our committees, we will begin workshopping maps. It is crucial for members to understand how these activities and decision points may interact with one another and how they should be weighted when considering where boundary lines are placed. Without the proper context for members to understand the issues and standards, we are not properly preparing ourselves to take votes on compliant district lines. Redistricting is a precise and technical process, and creating this framework is also consistent with Speaker Sproul's approach of education, training, and preparation. Before we get into the substance of today's meetings, I want to address a couple of additional items. First, let's address records retention. The House and this committee continues to urge all members to retain all records relating to redistricting. These records can include documents and correspondence, including email and text, regardless of whether sent or received on your public or personal devices or accounts. The House also continues to urge all members to avoid private conversations about redistricting with individuals who have a vested interest in the outcome of that process, and to keep their comments about the redistricting process in alignment with the constitutional standards that apply to redistricting plans. If you have questions regarding this guidance, please reach out to the House General Counsel's office. Next, I want to address committee procedures. While the redistricting subject matter may be new to many of you, the filing of bills and amendments will follow traditional House processes we are all familiar with. If you wish to submit a map as a bill, it will count towards your bill allotment, and you are subject to submission and filing deadlines. If you wish to amend committee work or product of another member's bill, those amendments will be heard through the standard committee process and are subject to the same respective deadlines. The members of the respective subcommittees will propose and analyze maps at the related committee of jurisdiction, and then will pass the maps to the Big Redistricting Committee for consideration. This is important. Members, the last thing I'll touch on is expectations for map submissions. As I've mentioned, the House expert expects transparency in how input for our work product is received, reviewed, and considered. This applies to you as well. You should not be naive to the fact that external entities and individuals want to influence this process in a way that may not be in compliance with the law. Similar to the House's high standards for lobbyist disclosures, the goal of transparency is to bring awareness to the process of individuals who may be trying to assert their undue influence into our process. If you choose to submit a map as part of this redistricting process, you should be prepared to disclose any and all individuals who assisted you in creating that map. Similarly, submissions by members of the public will be accompanied by a form inquiring about groups or individuals with whom they collaborated and whether any form of compensation was received and returned for comments or submissions. The work we have ahead of us is exciting, but we cannot overlook the gravity of what we are charged to do here. This is quite the undertaking. This important work only occurs every 10 years, and it is worth noting the legislature has only two constitutional requirements: to pass a balanced budget and to redistrict. And we should all be honored to carry this responsibility. I look forward to working with all of you to produce legally compliant maps that well serve the people of Florida. With that, I'll take a breath. Wow, you're all looking at me. This doesn't happen often. I'll take a breath and open it up to any questions the members on the committee may have. The ranking member Geller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this on?
I appreciate the help, Representative. Thank you. Cooperation. Is it possible that you, in consultation, of course, with the Speaker, could revisit the issue of map submission counting as a bill. Some of us already have, you know, kind of filled up our allotment or promise to of bills that we're going to introduce. And it, having not known that in advance, may have led us to say, I'll sponsor that, I'll take care of that. I understand the need to limit them, that we don't want hundreds of maps submitted that people have to deal with. But if it would be possible to revisit it and see if there could be a separate category that would be whether it's one or two that would only permit, you know, a single or two maps to be submitted per member outside of the allotment. It's just a little, a touch late in the process to just find that out. Obviously, Chair, and I'll have some other thoughts, but I certainly don't expect an answer on that today. I understand that in large measure it is a speaker's prerogative, but if it's something that you could address with the speaker, I think it would be a better outcome and still not subject the staff to being inundated with hundreds of maps. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ranking Member Geller, and I'll do my best to address that today. Of course, I'll take it up with the speaker at your request, but keep in mind that this does not limit you in any way from the number of amendments that you can file as to any of the maps that the committees will be filing. And because the number of amendments that you can file is not, does not take any of your bill slots, I think you will be perfectly able to submit whatever you would like. Any other questions? Okay, not seeing any other questions, we will move into the presentation. Okay, today's agenda, we're going to go over a redistricting overview, U.S. Census Bureau overview, Florida population overview, and a website demonstration. So first, we're going to go down to the basics here, and our goal here is to just to pound on education. We want you all to have the tools to make the decisions that you need to make. And to do that, I think we have to do this in context of understanding from ground zero what redistricting means. So we're going to start with some terminology. Reapportionment. Reapportionment is the redistribution of seats in the U.S. House of Representatives among the 50 states based on the decennial census. Each state gets at least one seat. Redistricting. The redrawing of congressional and state legislative districts' boundaries, usually after a decennial sentence. Other entities can redistrict, such as local governments, courts, and school boards. Federal law. Article 1, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution. The times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. The 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. One person, one vote. Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. No voting qualification or prerequisite to voting or standard practice or procedure shall be imposed or applied in a manner which results in a denial or abridgment of the right of any citizen of the United States to vote on account of race or color. Florida law, Article 3, Section 16 of the Florida Constitution. This directs the legislature at its regular session in the second year following each decennial census, 2022, to conduct redistricting of state legislative boundaries. There can be 30 to 40 senatorial districts, 80 to 120 representative districts. Districts shall be contiguous and consecutively numbered, and it provides directives and timelines for establishing new districts. Florida law continued. It also, Article 3, Sections 20 and 21 of the Florida Constitution lists standards for establishing congressional and legislative boundaries. Tier 1 standards take priority over Tier 2 standards in case of conflict. Within each tier, the standards are equal amongst one another. And you'll see this graph of Florida law walking you through how each of the things we just talked about work. So Tier 1. No apportionment plan or individual district shall be drawn with an intent to favor or disfavor a political party or an incumbent. Districts shall not be drawn with the intent or result of denying or abridging the equal opportunity of racial or language minorities to participate in the political process or to diminish their ability to elect representatives of their choice. Districts shall consist of contiguous territory. That's Tier 1. Tier 2. Districts shall be as nearly equal in population as practicable. Districts shall be compact. Districts, where feasible, utilize existing political and geographical boundaries. Florida law continued, moves into the chapter law. Chapter 8 of Florida statutes defines the technical boundaries of congressional districts. Chapter 10 of Florida statutes defines the technical boundaries of state Senate and state House districts. Chapter 11 of the Florida statute provides that the Florida legislature use the last federal decennial statewide census for apportionment purposes. Here's the redistricting timeline. You can see in 2020, December 31, the first entry there on the left was the statutory deadline for the U.S. Census Bureau to deliver apportionment counts to the President of the United States. This deadline was missed by the feds. Then we move next to March 31st, 2021, a statutory deadline for the states to receive the PL94-171 data. We'll get into what that means in a second, from the U.S. Census Bureau. That deadline was also missed. Then April 26, 2021, apportionment counts released by U.S. Census Bureau. Florida gains one seat in the U.S. House of Representatives, increasing our total of seats to 28. August, September, U.S. Census Bureau delivers PL94-171 redistricting data to the states. January 11th, regular session convenes. Florida Constitution requires maps to be approved during this legislative session. March 11th, 2022, sine die. June 13th, 2022, candidate qualifying period begins. August 23rd, 2022, the primary election occurs. And November 8th, 2022, the general election occurs. These things will start to make more sense to you as we go through and explain a little bit better on what their importance is as we go forward, but we thought that would be handy for you. Ranking Member Geller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question on this. It shows the date of June 13th for the candidate qualifying period. Is that the date for only state legislative candidates? I thought there was an earlier date for congressional candidates, but I'm not certain.
That's a good question. And also, I want to point out that I believe that's the beginning of the qualifying period. And let me ask Ms. Kelly here what the answer to your question is. Ms. Kelly. Thank you. In a quirk of the law, in redistricting years, state and federal qualifying dates are the same.
It's the same?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's very important.
Okay, let's move next into an overview of the U.S. Census Bureau. Again, we'll start with terminology. The Bureau contained within the U.S. Department of Commerce that conducts the decennial census, as well as numerous ongoing projects for the federal government. The decennial census, a complete count or enumeration of the population of the country conducted every 10 years. Apportionment counts, the number of seats in the U.S. House of Representatives each state receives following a decennial census. Redistricting data, the detailed population data produced and delivered to each state by the U.S. Census Bureau that is used as part of the redistricting process. Give me just a second here, folks. Thank you. This notebook is far superior. So now we're on Article 1, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution, which sets forth a mandate for an actual enumeration. This is a section that requires the decennial census to be conducted and that the count of whole persons be an actual enumeration of those people. This means an actual count of every person. Title 13, this establishes that the U.S. Census Bureau as the agency that is to conduct the decennial census and requires them to provide the data accurately and in a manner that protects the privacy of those being counted. PL 94-171, which stands for Public Law 94-171, this is what directs the Bureau to deliver to the states the product that contains summary statistics on population, demographics, and housing. Population counts for the total population and for the population 18 years or over and over are presented by race and Hispanic or Latino origin, and for the total group quarters population by major group quarters type. Decennial census. So the question is, how does the U.S. Census Bureau conduct the census? This is a sample image of what was used by the U.S. Census Bureau this time in 2020. It was mailed out in the beginning of 2020. This was the first census that allowed responses online. This proved to greatly help self-response rates, especially in light of COVID-19 pandemic. We continued, 2020 presented obviously unique challenges to us all, and the U.S. Census Bureau was no exception. You can see here that the whole process to conduct and tabulating the census results were delayed in 2020 due to COVID-19, wildfires, hurricanes, and locusts, and all sorts of other factors. I'm not going to walk through every item on this graphic, but we include it to illustrate the timeline challenges that the Census Bureau faced last year. Their challenges did result in the delay of the states receiving apportionment counts and redistricting data, and while that is unfortunate, at least these delays did not delay our timeline here in Florida. We are still on track and on schedule to complete our redistricting process during the next regular session, which is what our Constitution instructs us to do, despite these delays by the U.S. Census Bureau. Florida's total enumeration was consistent with the national average of 99.9%. That's 99.9% of the total households for which the Census Bureau has a record for were counted in the 2020 census. As we also saw in the last slide, there are two main phases of data collection during a census: self-response rate and non-response follow-up. Self-response is an individual completing the census questionnaire on their own, whether by mail, phone, or online. Non-response follow-up is where the Census Bureau goes back into the communities and using administrative records to help complete the outstanding questionnaires. You'll sometimes hear this latter process referred to as imputation. What is reassuring is that Florida's total enumeration was 99.9%, and this means that the count here in Florida was in line with the national averages completeness. The self-response rate and non-response follow-up rates in Florida were consistent with other states and with the overall national average. As we discussed before, Florida will be getting 28 congressional districts, one more than Florida had in 2010. You can also see what the quote-unquote ideal population is for each district within each map. It is based on the new statewide population divided by the number of districts in each plan. These numbers are the guideposts for our districts as we began drawing maps. So now that we've talked about the Census Bureau's process, let's discuss the types of Census Bureau data we typically or specifically use for redistricting. The PL data, or the PL 94-171 redistricting data, is a detailed population data set and the basis for us to analyze and draw district boundaries. The geography support products details the geographical landscape of Florida. These two buckets of data and products work together to enable our redistricting process. The redistricting data, or PL data for short, is broken down in the different census geography layers, the smallest being called blocks. This is detailed population data that is grouped by total population, voting age population, and is then grouped by race and ethnic groups. This also contains group quarters data. While this data is provided as part of the redistricting data, it has minimal involvement with the redistricting process. However, demographers and statisticians use this data for other analysis. The same data was delivered in legacy format on August the 12th. And that very same data was then delivered again to us officially in a more user-friendly format just last week on September 16th. The census questionnaire asks a variety of questions. However, there are two that are specifically important for redistricting purposes. The first is question 8, which asks respondents to identify their ethnicity. This results in two categories, Hispanic or Latino, and not Hispanic or Latino. Question 9 asks a respondent to identify their race, resulting in 6 categories. The 6 categories are American Indian or Alaska, Native, Asian, Black or African American, Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander, white or other race. And if you look closely at the census questionnaire, you can see how the Census Bureau has provided some examples of what is contained within each of those racial categories. If a respondent selects multiple categories, using the guidance given to us from the U.S. Office of Management and Budget, they are counted in each racial category they selected. You will see these categories again as we go through the software and understand the legal requirements, especially surrounding protecting benchmark minority districts. Now that we've talked about how the population data is collected and how people can identify themselves, let's talk about geography. The geography support products are produced by the Census Bureau and essentially break down the landscape of Florida into different geographical units. These units are then used to draw districts. Census blocks are the smallest unit of geography defined by the U.S. Census Bureau. They range in size from individual parcels of land to city blocks to larger areas. Regardless of geographic size or population, they serve as the building blocks for the other units of geography. We'll take a look closer at this as we take this committee through the map drawing application. You'll get a better sense of it then, and you'll be able to see firsthand how these units of geography and the associated population counts give us a detailed picture of Florida's population. Let's pause there for a second to see if we have any questions. All right, seeing no questions, now that we've covered a lot of terminology and baseline details, let's actually take a look at some of the Florida's top line results of the 2020 census. Here you can see Florida's 67 counties and which ones grew in population. The darker the green indicates a greater percent change in population. The light colored counties lost population when compared to the 2010 population counts. The counties with the biggest increases were mostly in the Central Florida area. Many of the more rural counties in Florida lost population, which was consistent with national trends. Above on the on the screen there are the counties with over 20% growth that we saw on the previous slide. You can see there Osceola, St. John, Sumter, Walton Lake, Orange, Santa Rosa, Manatee, Nassau, Lee, Pasco, Flagler, and Polk. On the next slide, these are the counties that lost population that we saw, that we talked about on the previous slide. And those are Gulf, Hardy, Lafayette, Calhoun, Madison, Glades, Gadsden, Hamilton, Jackson, Liberty, Taylor, DeSoto, Jefferson, Putnam, Holmes, Okeechobee, and Bradford. This next chart shows the top 10 largest counties. They're the same 10 as in 2010. However, Duval overtook Pinellas for the number 6 spot in this decade. Those are Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, Hillsborough, Orange, Duval, Pinellas, Lee, Polk, and Brevard. The next slide, these are the smallest counties, same 10 as in 2010. They are Liberty, Lafayette, Glades, Franklin, Calhoun, Hamilton, Gulf, Jefferson, Union, and Dixie. You can see now the Florida municipalities. This is a comparison between last census and this census. Florida gained one city and now has 412 compared to the 411 cities it had in 2010. Wekiwachi is still considered an incorporated municipality because they were incorporated on April 1, 2020 census day. The next slide shows the top 10 largest cities in Florida. Cape Coral makes the list after being 11th in 2010, but that's Jacksonville is the largest, Miami, Tampa, Orlando, St. Petersburg, Hialeah, Port St. Lucie, Tallahassee, Cape Coral, and Fort Lauderdale. The next slide, this is similar to the slide, but to the county slide, but shows how each house district changed in population. The darker the green indicates larger percentage growth. It again shows that the I-4 corridor gained the most population by percentage. The next slide, this is similar to the former slide, but shows how each Senate district changed in population. You can see this shows the same patterns as a house map, but obviously for much larger districts. The next slide shows how each congressional district changed in population. It again shows that Central Florida gained the most by percentage. Do we have any questions at this point in time? All right, members, seeing no questions, we'll move on. We're gonna move into the redistricting website demonstration. I've had a preview of this. This is fascinating, and what the advancements in the technology have taken place over the last 10 years, and what access and really just workability that it will provide to the constituents and citizens of the state of Florida. And with that, I will turn it over to Lita. Ms. Kelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the assistance of DJ, I'd like to walk the members of the committee through our website today. I will tell you, you guys are getting a brand new look at this. We rolled this out and debuted it to the public about 2 hours ago, so it's hot off the presses. Redistricting committees of both the Senate and the House have ventured into a joint website as well as our joint map drawing software for this decade. And while DJ draws that up, I'll talk a little bit about some of the vendors and the accessibility that we have. So as part of our website, we have contracted with Esri. They are an industry leader with GIS mapping technology, and it really brings to life what we can do with our redistricting software. The website that we have here for you today and is available now to the public has a lot of really amazing functionality as far as interactivity and accessibility for people all across the state. One of the first things I'd like to point out on the homepage here is, DJ, if you could hover over the icon there on the left, we've embedded a Google Translate functionality here so that no matter what language people speak or need to be able to translate the website into, they have that functionality built right into the website. Florida is very diverse, and we wanted to make sure and respect that. DJ, if you could scroll to the bottom of the homepage. What this website allows us for, there's a lot of data involved in the redistricting process, and if you could click on that Explore button to be able to pull up some very interactive maps that we have. These maps here are very similar to what Chair Leak just walked through, showing different over-under populations and taking Florida's current maps and being able to make them clickable and usable to any person right off the bat. So DJ, if you'd scroll up to the map. And just click on a district, any district. What it allows is to be able to identify a district, and when you click on it, it pops up with the statistics that we've identified. So it shows the current population of the district, the new ideal population, as well as where those deviation percentages and raw numbers come from. So again, it's quickly accessible, and it's provided there for the House, Senate, and congressional districts, as well as Florida's counties and cities. DJs, if you'd move on to the About page, please. So here, again, a lot of the materials that we've gone through today, creating that educational foundational basis for anyone that wants to be involved in this process is just paramount. And so a lot of the material that we've walked through today, we also want to make sure the public has readily available. So as DJ continues to scroll through the screen, you'll see the population figures as updated for this decade, as well as some of the legal references that, again, we went through earlier in this presentation, as well as things like the redistricting process, and even the timeline associated with it. Every state has a very unique timeline when it comes to redistricting, and so we want to make sure people understand the context of which Florida's operating in. DJ, you can move on to the House Committee page, please. Here, front and center, you will see our lovely committee leadership. Thank you all for serving. What we did want to do is be able to make this a one-stop shop for people. Anyone that's interested in this process. There's obviously resources that exist on our My Florida House committee page as well. So what we've been able to do is link all of that to existing documents or publications or being able to access the Florida Channel to watch our meetings. Again, we really want this website to serve as a one-stop shop where everyone can go and find whatever they need about redistricting. So you'll see here the House page is divided into our three, our big committee and our two subcommittees. And then if you keep scrolling down, we have additional resources that you'd also find for other standard legislative processes. Memos and correspondence, how to identify who your current representative is, as well as tracking bills and being able to appear in committee. We round out the webpage with the Florida House calendar and other important legislative dates, again, so constituents can stay informed. The next tab on the website is for the Senate committee page. Again, this is a joint website that we're doing together. So they have similar functionality tailored for their chamber and information about their respective committee as well. The next tab is our resources tab. Now, DJ, if you'd actually go and click into the tab that I have open. So these top items that you saw on the webpage, they're called story maps. What this allows us to do is, again, very graphically, very consumably, show and produce the maps that Florida has enacted dating all the way back to the 1980 redistricting cycle. So DJ, if you'll scroll down, the really cool functionality about this is as you scroll, the districts will actually change. and you might need to let it catch up. Sometimes it lags a little bit. So you can scroll through. There's a brief description of what happens with that decade, and then you can see the associated map that was enacted during that process. So again, giving people context not only from where Florida's been, but through our current currently enacted maps as well. DJ, you can flip back over to the other tab now. Thank you. Also found on this resources page, again, documents like our glossary. We also have links to the U.S. Census Bureau. They are the official source where we derive a lot of our data, definitions, logistics from. So we wanted to make sure and give folks a direct access back to any item that they also have available. If you'd now like to go over to the Get Involved page, I think this is the one people are going to be most interested in. So if you'd pause here in this top section, this is the page where I feel like a lot of you will be directing your constituents who want to get involved in this process in drawing maps. So as well as rolling out this website a couple hours ago, we've also debuted our map drawing software. This button right here where it says click here to draw and submit maps is where you can direct individuals who'd like to create a profile and actually go into our software and create maps of their own. The legislature has a submission process where any map that's drawn, if a member of the public would like to submit that map, we have the ability to do that through our map drawing portal and the forms that are associated with it. So again, I feel like you guys may be visiting this page often, but we encourage you to. We encourage people to get involved and create profiles if they're interested in this topic. DJ, you can continue to scroll down. Additionally, with regards to the software, we have quick start guides, which is kind of a how do I get started quickly drawing, how do I create my profile, perhaps change my password, as well as our help manual, which goes into a little more detail, perhaps with some of the more advanced drawing tools or some more nuances of how we have the software set up as well. The last section that we have here is tutorial videos as well. Again, everyone learns with a little bit different style, so we wanted to make it easily accessible and right there and available for them. You can click onto the last page, DJ. The last page, again, we want to make this connected with the existing resources that are out there for both the House and the Senate. So we wanted to make sure and do direct links back to our respective committee pages, as well as our committees have a direct help account for anyone who needs assistance, again, whether it's with resetting their password or anything along those lines. So help@floridaredistricting.gov is prominently displayed on our website, and you can encourage people to visit that and email us if they need assistance as well. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it back over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Members, I'm going to open this up for questions about the website. I do want to point out a couple things because this is a significant advancement for the state and for us, quite frankly, in drawing districts. That data, all the data that we have, all the processes that we have, will be available not only to every one of you, but to every interest group out there, to every citizen out there. We'll have the ability to get in, learn how to use the material, and to draw and submit their own maps. Just think about that for a second. Every citizen in the state of Florida, through this, will have access to the data and the ability to submit and draw maps and make their voices heard. And so with that, members, I'll open it up if there are any questions about the software. Ranking Member Geller.
Thank you again, Chair, and thank you for this very thorough look. Looks like a great website, and I congratulate you and staff on this seemingly excellent tool. When you said that everybody in the state will have the opportunity to use this, any interested person, and submit a map, that's great. My question is there any procedure that's in place or any contemplation as to whether or not maps submitted will be reviewed by either members of the committee, the staff of the committee, somebody, because submitting it is only helpful if it doesn't go to the dead letter office. What's contemplated about that?
Let me, you know, as we're kind of working through this, like we said, this website is 2 hours old, but it is equipped to do those things. The precise way to do it, I would defer to Ms. Kelly.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So all of the submissions come into our office. I'd like to actually echo some of the sentiments that Chair Leak had earlier. You know, any public input that comes in, just like any other piece of legislation or bill, it will filter through the respective representatives. And what you guys offer up, whether, again, if it's an individual bill or an amendment to a committee work product, at that point would make its way formally through our committee. But every piece of public input that is submitted does, again, come to staff, and we'll eventually reach a point where we'll actually be putting that on the website as well. So every map that's submitted, as well as the statistical reports that go along with it, and the actual drawing shape files is what they're called, will be publicly available, and anyone can access them on a new page on our website. We're just not quite there yet. We don't have any maps.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that very much, Ms. Kelly, and that's a thorough answer. Is it the case that in order to receive consideration by the committee, that anything submitted by citizens has to be advanced by a member, whether as a bill or as an amendment, or is there some process by which I don't want to bury committee staff here either, and I understand how many could be coming. My question is there some process by which everything submitted will get at least some kind of review, maybe a tier one, if we can steal that terminology, to determine whether it's worthy of further study, if it presents anything novel, if it's different, and that in some fashion it won't be just membership driven, but that there would be some level of consideration where staff would go through them, and at some point the staff would present this input from the public to all the members. Again, not necessarily, I'm not asking if every single one, because, you know, we could be as buried as the members of staff. But is there some process by which there would be some winnowing and some select one, some version, some standard, however it's done, would end up being presented to us instead of by us?
Ms. Kelly, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So here's what I guess I will answer back to you, Representative. Thank you for the question. Especially with the acknowledgement that we don't know how many maps we may be receiving, we're going to look to members to really be able to go into the public input, understand what they think makes sense for this committee, for this process, what you guys believe are going to meet those requirements, and how what you would like committee staff to look at, whether that's, you know, a formal request or being able to say, you know, this is a compliant map for XYZ reasons. We're going to look to members of the committee to assist with that.
Last follow-up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So, look, I want to be clear. I understand this is a new process for practically all of us, and it's got to be developed. I don't know, you know, some of the questions I'm asking, maybe there aren't answers for yet, and that's fine. That's, you know, we'll need them soon, but not necessarily today. But if we are on the website and we see one that we think is a good one that was submitted by a member of the public, maybe they contacted us and said, please look at my map. Maybe we were just trolling through the public stuff and said, wow, that's a good one. If we contact staff and say, there are, out of this 300, and I hope it's not 3,000, there are three that I think are really good, please take a look at those. Does that count as our submitting our own map where, oh, okay, you said to look at this one, that's your seventh bill or something like that? Or looking down the road, are we contemplating at some point that there would be something akin to a PCB process where, I mean, is it contemplated that the committee and committee staff will say, here's a map, or here's five maps, or here's 10 maps, and if we advocate for inclusion of one in that, does that count against our bills? Or if it's coming from, is it contemplated, it might come from you guys, and we can just urge that? I'm sorry, that's such a rambling question.
Thank you, Ranking Member Giller. I love your questions because there are always so many of them in one. Let me see if I can unwind that a bit. At the end of the day, there will be a joint resolution that we will propose the maps. Okay? Is it a PCB? No, but it's a joint resolution. The only way that a map would count against your bill allotment is if you file it as a bill. If you ask staff to review a specific map because you would like it reviewed, then we will review a specific map. The staff will review a specific map. Did I get them all? Excellent. Thank you. Representative Driscoll, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Kelly, for the presentation. I look forward to interacting with the website. It does look transformative. A question, I love the integration with Google Translate. I was curious if you thought about or considered or would consider looking into, I know there's a way with Translate where you can actually have the language listed in the native, like, you know, format for that language, as those who may not be native English speakers may not understand the English that is on the page, and maybe we could think about writing it in their native language. But that's not a question, I guess that's more a comment, sorry. Mr. Chair, the question for you, which is that, because I know this process is new, and you mentioned only a few members had been through the redistricting process before. It's my understanding that in past years, there may have been roadshows where committee members would go across the state or around the state and engage the community in that way. Is that something that this committee is contemplating this time around? And if so, what would that look like?
Thank you for the question. And you know, in all fairness, those discussions are still being had between the Senate and the House. We are obviously substantially impacted by the delay in getting the data. Remember, when years past, when there has been roadshows, that data had come in, you may have had 9 months to work with the data, right? That's not the case now. So although those decisions haven't been made, I would say that it's going to be difficult to do a roadshow like anything you've seen in the past. I am very enthusiastic about the accessibility of this website, because not only are we, you know, faced with a constitutional timeline for finishing the product and a shortened period of time in which we can work on that product, we have also had substantial material gains in technology and accessibility that will increase access for the public. So those things where you used to have to go to a city to find out what the citizens thought that the district should look like, they now have access. And not only do they now have access, they have access to the data, the same data that we would use to do those things. So that's kind of my long way of saying I can't answer that question definitively yet, but that you kind of see the hurdles that we're facing. Representative Driscoll, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that insight and letting us know that those contemplations and conversations are still going on. This actually is a question for Ms. Kelly. Is the website ADA compliant?
Ms. Kelly, you recognized?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that question. Yes, it is. There's alternative text built into the background of it, and as well, specifically on the House committee page at the very bottom, we've linked directly back to standard House protocol for any ADA accessibility, whether it's in a committee meeting or anything along those lines. So those are provided in the website.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Thompson, you're recognized for a question.
To be involved in drawing maps, or members of the public, are we to consider existing maps as a baseline, or is this de novo and we start all over again?
Thank you, Senator. As you know, because there are maps that you are submitting, I would encourage you to make sure that your considerations are compliant with the Florida Constitution and law, but your rationale for drawing the maps that you draw to submit is yours.
Follow up.
You're recognized.
There's been a lack of clarity, and I think it's important for citizens to understand whether or not they are bound by maps as they exist today, or if they can just start all over again and draw maps. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Thank you. I think I understand your question, and I'll try to restate my answer a little bit. But you or a citizen or any member must draw maps that are compliant with the Constitution, not necessarily based on something that happened 10 years ago or quite frankly, population data that's a decade old, right? So, but how you choose to do it is up to you.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay, members, let me give this, I'm gonna recognize Representative Skidmore here in a second, but let me give a little explanation here. Representative Skidmore is asked to sit in. And in our normal process, we would invite any member to come and sit in. However, we only take questions when all the other members have exhausted their questions, and we make sure we don't cut any member of the public short. So it doesn't look like we have that problem today. So Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your indulgence. And this might be for you or Ms. Kelly. As we or the public begin to draw maps, and as Representative Geller said, we see one that looks good, what is the criteria that we are using to label those maps as good? Are we looking at the ideal number in terms of the congressional districts? We can't deviate by one person. Is there a template or a set of rules or guidelines that the public could be given, or even the members could be given, so that they're using the formula that the committee staff is going to be gauging the maps on as well?
Thank you. Let me take a shot at that. It doesn't matter where the map comes from, whether it's you, me, the committee, or any member of the public. It has to be compliant with the same set of standards. Those standards are outlined for us in federal and Florida law, Florida's Constitution. There's also a great deal of court precedent that backs these up. That's where we get the tier one, we get the tier two. What we're gonna take the next several meetings to do is to educate everyone here and the public on what those laws are. I wish I could tell you there's a formula. There's not, right? There are considerations. Some of which are given equal consideration, some of which are the second tier down consideration. And through that process, we will come up with compliant maps. Ranking Member Geller, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very informative discussion. I want to go back to the point that Rep. Driscoll raised and kind of see if there's not maybe a middle ground to consider. Old style road shows are so pre-COVID. The notion that people, including the staff of this committee or members of this committee, need to travel anywhere to hear the public is not the case anymore. If we can have the vision to catch up to technology, as the vice chair is always urging us to do. So, on the other hand, the idea that members of the public would have to come to Tallahassee to go stand at the Civic Center and to be piped in, so to speak, to us is equally ridiculous as to tell the members of the committee and the staff. Isn't there a way that we could set up reapportionment day in these various cities, population centers? And by the way, I say cities, but you know, Rep. Drake, I don't want to be omitting non-city areas of the state, where we could set up.
I love your questions to best foreshadow the argument against, but go ahead.
Good point, Chair. Where we could have some kind of local staff, wouldn't even have to be anybody from here, set up some Zooms where people, I mean, I guess they could always do it from their own living room too, but if we set something up that said, if you want a more formalized process, this is reapportionment day in Orlando, and if you've got something to say, come get on a Zoom there, with, you know, 5, 10 other 15 people, you can, you know, all meet, or maybe we could just have it be from your living room. And this committee could hear and take that testimony on a limited basis. I mean, we couldn't do it all the time for every city, but we could have a few meetings. And instead of a road show, we wouldn't even necessarily have to be here. We could all be at home too, but we would call a meeting, a virtual meeting of the committee, just to hear the public, just to hear what they have to say. Everybody could log on. We'd be sitting here. You'd call it to order. You'd tell people, you know, how long they have and keep them from rambling on and cut them off when you have to. And we could allot a certain amount of time, and then, you know, everybody could make their point and not have to come here. And hopefully even we don't have to come here for it. We could just all log on, and I bet we'd have better attendance too. So I don't know if that's doable. Maybe there are technological challenges to it that I don't foresee, but I would like to offer it for consideration. It's a way of accomplishing that and yet conforming to that shortened calendar that you discussed, and keeping us from having, as members of the committee, to have that inordinate problem where we're going to have to traipse all over the state as well. I don't think we need to do that to hear the public. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ranking Member Geller. I have no indication that the committee meetings here will be any different than the committee meetings we've been having. I'm not sure how long you've been here, Representative Geller, but I think you're in your final term, but a long time, right? So I think the committee meetings will continue to operate in that fashion. I'm certainly willing to think about that issue. I do want to point out, unlike any other committee that you have probably ever served on, the public will have direct access to you and out of their homes, at their convenience, through this website, and information that they would have never had before. So that's going to occur. I'm kind of excited to see, you know, how much input that we get. I think one of the problems with doing the roadshow or the virtual roadshows you're talking about is it would be probably not be feasible to do in every city or community. So would you be favoring high density communities over low density? There's a lot of issues that go with what you're talking about, but I do appreciate the suggestion. Thank you. All right, members, are there any further questions? All right, we will move to, Representative Drake, you're recognized for a question.
What's the allowable variance in the population changes? So if, like, the new data shows that 21.538 million divided by 120 gives you 179,485. So if a house district, for example, is about 180,000, what's the acceptable variance to when you're drawing the maps? It's like a percent or something, like 1 or 2 or 3%, one way or the other?
I'll take that and then kick it to Ms. Kelly. So great question. What we know from the precedent, court precedent, is that generally anything under the 10% would be allowable. It depends on the reasons that you have that variation, and so that's kind of a case-by-case basis when we're talking about state and Senate legislative districts. Did I say that right, Ms. Kelly?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. And okay. And just to complete the thought on congressional districts, there's a strict standard of plus or minus 1%. So state legislative districts have a little bit more leeway. But yes, sir.
Okay. Is it 1% on the congressional or one person?
One person. You're right. It's one person. Plus or minus 1%. All right. Let me be clear here, okay? There's a different standard for congressional districts than there is for state legislative districts by law. Congressional districts are plus or minus one person. So when you're counting people in a district, it can't vary more than one person from the other districts. The state legislative districts are necessarily different. And the court precedent that we are given at that level is it could be as much as a 10% variance. And let me check on something right here. Historically, in Florida, the variance has been in the 1 to 2% range, even though the courts would say that 10% or less would be permissible. we'll have to see, right? We'll have to see how the maps draw. And you know, one thing I want you guys to remember, this is, it's not as simple as saying, well, if we just move this line here over here, then we get the ideal population, because moving that line changes the population for, you know, the district next to it. And so it gets very, very complex. But we'll work our way through it. Representative Onfroy, you're recognized. Okay, can you try to find a microphone that works? Okay. Here.
You keep talking.
Yeah, they've been bad. This
one. They're I just want to make sure we preserve this for the record, so.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you, Representative Onfroy, you're recognized.
Thank you so very much, Chair Leak. I'd like to ask a question to Director Kelly. Thank you. Director Kelly, is there a tutorial on there on how to do the maps or how to use the maps by any chance?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Do you mean to actually like log into the software and how to use the drawing functionality? Is that for clarification? Is that your question?
Correct, Director Kelly.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Quick Start Guide and the Help Manual that are listed on there list out some more of the detailed functionality. So, for instance, if there's a tool on there, it'll take in written form, step by step, how to access that tool and, you know, for instance, how to save a map. It'll take you exactly through the steps needed to do that. So, yes, that is provided.
Thank you so very much. Chair, I have a question for you.
You're recognized.
How will you decide if we do go out into the field, which members would be participating? Would you do it based on the region that we're in, or would you like create some kind of a, you know, rolling crew? And then I have one other question.
Okay, truthfully, I don't know. I mean, right now we're talking about a hypothetical decision, and you know, I think logistically that's going to be tough, but I don't know yet.
One other question.
You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Actually, it's more of a statement. I'm truly impressed by the work that was taking place between the Florida House and the Florida Senate to create this website. And I just wanted to be noted that I'm looking forward to fiddling around with it and to seeing what we get back from the public. So I just want to say thank you to our staff and the Senate staff for pulling together such an amazing website. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Slosberg, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. My question is, and maybe you discussed this earlier, when somebody submits a map to the website, does that become public on the website, or is it something that gets sent around to us as committee members, or what happens to it?
I think that's a good question. We did address it a little bit earlier, but Ms. Kelly, if you could fine-tune your answer to her question, I would appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. So once they're put onto the website, they're accessible for everyone. As far as the process for making them available to committee members, if committee work products or member maps that are put forward are brought to committee, those will be produced as part of the meeting packets. Otherwise, the other maps that are submitted by the public will be accessible, and you can go out and access those at any point in time from the website.
Representative Slosberg, you're recognized.
So if Representative Geller filed a map as a bill, would that as well show up on this website under the maps?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, if it comes through the committee process, it will show up on that website. Yes, ma'am.
And let me follow up a little bit. You all as members were actually having access through Legis, so you can submit bills. Representative Mariano, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question following up on that. We have a feature on the House website, Write My Representative, where we get sent things directly to our emails when they come in from our constituents. Would it have any functionality to that level, or we would just have to go and look by address to see who were our constituents that were submitting?
Ms. Kelly, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Whenever we, our goal is whenever we debut this, there will be some sort of sortability functionality so that, you know, you're not searching a specific address perhaps to find a map, but you'll be able to search by different identifiable features. So, for instance, if you only want to see congressional maps that were submitted, you'll be able to sort and filter by that. Thank you.
And I've only had a preview of the website. Again, we launched it 2 hours ago. But your ability to sort and filter information is pretty remarkable.
Just a follow-up.
Representative Mariano, you're recognized.
Is there any direct functionality for it to be sent when a constituent submits it to their representative or senator?
Oh, Ms. Kelly, can you answer that question?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. I don't believe that's currently in the works, but I'll make a note of that and take it back and see if that's a possibility.
All right, members, any further questions? Representative Robinson, recognized.
Chair, to go back to the document retention issue you spoke about earlier, if we get an email from a constituent or a non-constituent and we respond, do we have to forward that email to committee staff, or what do you suggest that we do with regard to that type of process?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. Ms. Kelly, do you have a recommendation on that?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Any documents or correspondence that you receive from constituents or otherwise, I would highly recommend that you retain that for your records. It doesn't necessarily need to be sent to committee staff, but it does need to be retained in your personal records, your official records. Thank you.
And let me follow up on it. You know, if you have any doubt whatsoever, please ask, right? Ask. You can either, poor Lita here, you can either send it to Ms. Kelly, or you can ask whether it's something that should be sent to Ms. Kelly. All right. I want to get to public comment. Okay. Members, are there any other questions? Members of the committee, any other questions? Ranking Member Gelly, you're recognized.
Yes, Chair, just very briefly, will there be an opportunity after public comment before we adjourn for some non-question comments?
Assuming that we have time.
Thank you,
I believe so.
Thank you, Chair.
All right, moving into public comment. I would remind you to keep your comments on the presentation and overview that was presented today, and staying with committee protocol. Your comments should be directed to those things that we saw today and those things that we did today. So first, oh, come on, guys. Andrew Taramikin. Am I saying that? Forgive me for not getting that right if I didn't. From Fair Election Center's Campus Vote Project.
You're actually pretty good on the last name.
Oh, thank you.
My name is Andrew Taramikin. I'm here with the Campus Vote Project Redistricting Fellowship. I've lived in the Gainesville community for about a year now as a student at UF, and I would like to ask you to keep Gainesville and campus communities like it together as you draw these maps. We talked a lot today, or you talked a lot today about the demographic data of different districts, and students are a unique class in this state. For example, Gainesville is distinct both locally and in the state as a whole for its high population of students. It's more urban, it's more diverse, and has a much younger population than many of the rural counties and towns surrounding it. And it's also worth noting that even among the local populations, college towns tend to be more diverse than other communities around them. Consequently, this unique identity puts us in a difficult situation politically, especially when it comes to gaining representation at the state and federal levels. This difficulty is compounded when our town is split up into different districts, further diluting the voting power of a community that's already in the minority among its neighbors. Currently, Gainesville is kept whole in the U.S. House and the Senate, but we're split into two districts in this chamber, the Florida House. The current boundaries of House Districts 20 and 21 cut directly through our community, across Archer Road, down 23rd Street, and back up 13th Street, cleanly separating the campus proper from the off-campus neighborhoods where thousands of students live. I'll use myself as an example. My freshman year, I lived in Cypress Hall, and Mr. Clemens was my representative. This year, I live in an apartment less than a mile away, and now Ms. Hinson is my representative. Now, I believe Mr. Clemens and Ms. Hinson are both fine people to represent me in the Florida House, but why do we need two people, people who, might I note, are not of the same political party, representing one school? I shop at the same Publix, I get my bagels and coffee at the same places, I frequent the same bars and restaurants and parks that I went to as a freshman. So why am I represented by a different legislator than I was last year? Why do I have a different representative than my friends who live on campus? And why doesn't one representative have to answer to all the students at UF? As students and teachers, we contribute a lot, not only to our community, but to this state. We all saw the photos of the governor hoisting a Florida Gators baseball jersey with the number 5 on it after the U.S. News college rankings came out last week. And I was really proud to see those photos, and I'm sure many of you were too. But it would be horribly unfair for the state to take advantage of our success politically, but dilute our ability as students to participate in the civic body of the state. I know many of you in this legislature are Gators yourselves, so you know how meaningful this community is and other college communities across Florida. So I ask that you ensure that our voice can be heard at all levels of government. Thank you so much for your time and consideration. I really look forward to seeing how this process played out in Florida, and God bless the state of Florida. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Next up, Jeffrey Sharkey, League of Women Voters of Florida. Seeing no Mr. Sharkey, we will move on. He waves in support. Sharkey, good to see you. Next up, Jonathan Weber, Florida Conservation Voters, Inc.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much.
My name is John. You're recognized.
I'm sorry. Thank you. My name is Jonathan Weber. I'm the Deputy Director of Florida Conservation Voters. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak. I gave similar remarks in the Senate committee on Monday. Fair voting districts are the most important aspect of our democratic republic. The integrity of our entire system is in those little lines in the map, which are now completely in your hands. 11 years ago, 63% of Florida voters approved 2 amendments to our Constitution related to the redistricting process. Thank you for reviewing them. Like you, I will be referring to that section in the Constitution regularly as we engage over the coming weeks and months. But the words in the Constitution are only one part of the story. I strongly and respectfully encourage the following. So please ensure that all map drafts become visible in real time and that the actual work of map making is live streamed with audio and video. Preserve all communications about redistricting and make them available as public records. Solicit extensive input from the public. Seek out and work to understand opposing perspectives and points of view. Provide ample notice of all proceedings and public comment opportunities. And find ways to get the people of Florida involved in a meaningful way, even if they do not have means to travel to Tallahassee, which includes virtual verbal input opportunities. Input in committee meetings is not enough, especially when Floridians want to comment in multiple maps and they cannot make it up to Tallahassee for multiple meetings. I do love the website, and thank you so much for putting that together, but not everyone has regular internet access or internet skills, especially in some of our rural counties, so that's something to consider. Please ensure language accessibility for our rich and diverse population. I noticed the redistricting website does have the translation feature, a little blue button. Thank you so much for that. But it looks like the translations don't extend to some of the PDFs on the site, or the mapping portal, or the instructions on how to use the mapping portal. I've only done a quick survey of this, so maybe I'm wrong and I apologize for that, but that's what it seemed like to me. But thank you. So translation services are a must. I know that each and every one of you is taking this process seriously, and I want you to know that so are the people of Florida. I'll close by saying the redistricting process demands your best. It demands our best in the public. Future generations are watching. Current generations are counting on you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. Seeing no further public comment. Pardon me? Is there further public comment? I'm sorry, have you submitted a, oh, is it Mr. Sharkey?
Rich Templin,
I'm sorry, Mr. Templin, throw me off sometimes. Have you submitted a form?
I tried.
You tried, okay. Well, you are recognized, and I'm sure we'll clear that up. You're recognized, Mr. Templin.
Thank you, always good to see you running a meeting, Mr. Chairman. And welcome back to our fair city, everybody, we're glad to have you. I represent the Florida AFL-CIO. We make up, we're privileged to represent about 1.3 million Floridians, union members, retirees, and their families. We have 10 central labor councils located in every geographic region of Florida. We have members in all 67 counties. We're pretty equally split between registered Republicans, registered Democrats, and no party affiliation voters. Our members as a group vote at higher rates than the general population. They tend to be more active in local politics. They're political animals. and they really care about this redistricting process. I was here 10 years ago, and we had an incredible amount of interest from our membership across the state. We have a very comprehensive network, and I so applaud all of the goals that the chairman laid out today about this process and how you're going to move forward. And I really just wanted to offer that we are here and available as this process continues to be fine-tuned. We will be sending it out to our members in every parts of the state. We'll be doing everything that we can to engage our membership and our leadership in this process. If you have something that needs to get out to the general public, please let us know, and it will go with no editorial comment. We want this process to involve as many people as possible. We want this process, as you do, to be as transparent as possible, and we're just offering to help. And we hope that it's going to be an exciting time. I remember, again, 10 years ago, you're going to learn a whole lot about the state of Florida. And one thing you might not have thought yet, when you guys are done, we're going to be able to change the wall art in a lot of our offices, because I've been looking at the same pictures for 10 years, and I'd really like to get some different maps. So thank you very much for agreeing to be on this committee and the hard work that you guys have ahead. And if there's anything the people of the Florida AFL-CIO can do to help, we want to do that in a completely nonpartisan, fair, open, transparent way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Templin. And please go old school here and fill out a paper or parents card. Thank you. Any other public comment? Am I missing anyone? Not seeing any other public comment. Thank you for those comments. I hope you found today's materials educational and a solid first step in this journey. Again, our goal is to educate you so that you have the information that you need to make good, lawful decisions. A quick housekeeping note regarding the map drawing application that was launched today. Committee staff will be reaching out over the next couple of days to provide you with your pre-registered login credentials. I encourage you to take the time to explore our new website, familiarize yourself with our map drawing application so that you can help your constituents. Also, keep your eyes open for an email about an upcoming legislator university for additional training on the map drawing application. Members, thank you. This concludes, Ranking Member Geller, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a couple of very quick comments before we adjourn. I want to start by saying that I appreciated the opportunity to speak with you last week about this. And as always, your courtesy and graciousness is appreciated. And I'll say publicly that you said to me we were going to have an open and transparent process. And as I told you, based on everything I've ever had to deal with you, when you say it, I believe it, because you've never said anything to me that hasn't turned out to be so. I also had the opportunity to meet with Ms. Kelly, the staff director, today. She sought me out. I greatly appreciate that as well. That's another sign of courtesy and frankly, respect for my caucus, and we appreciate that. I think that from everything I've heard, there's going to be a sincere effort to focus on an open and a transparent process so that people will know what we're doing and how we're doing it. The people of the state deserve that. And I commend you, Chair, and the Speaker for instituting a process that I think will be very helpful. I do want to add one thing to it. And I mentioned this briefly to you and also to Ms. Kelly. Process is very important, and how we do things matters tremendously. But I do want to put out just one other, a marker or goalpost for us. At the end of the day, I know we've got tier one, and I know we've got tier two, but there is kind of a tier three that's sort of penumbral, and it has to do with other considerations that aren't specifically enumerated. I think one of those is fairness. The people of the state voted to adopt a fair district amendment, or several, technically, and I think they expect a fair process. So I want to just say that as important as process is, and it's very important, results matter too. And at the end of the day, I hope we will all be able to look back and say that what we delivered was a fair result. And I just want to give one thought on that, since we have a few moments, and I appreciate that courtesy, Chair. This state, over the last three general elections, at the top of the ticket, and I want to note all of those were won by the Republican candidate, so we're looking at it from the standpoint of what is. I believe it was a one-point margin, 50.5 to 49.5 in 2016. In 2018, in the governor's race, it was a 0.4% margin. And in 2020, it was just over 3 points. I think it was 51 to 48 approximately. And yet we have a legislature that has very different numbers and percentages to that. I don't suggest that there aren't a lot of external factors beyond how maps are drawn. Frankly, in most cases, Republicans are more successful at raising money than Democrats. We could talk about why that is, but it's just a reality. And there is a role for having good candidates who run good races and win. And I don't mean to discount that either. But we know that there are ways that maps can be drawn, and then there are other ways that maps can be drawn. So one thing, speaking only for myself, that I'm going to be looking to at the end, I'm not interested, and the law prohibits, favoring one political party. And that's clear, and I'm not interested in that. I have no intent. I do think that we should be guided in some fashion by the expressed will of the people of Florida. And one very good way, not the only way, I mean, there's a lot of ways you determine that. I mean, you know, not always the top of the ticket races. We did have one that was 50-50 for cabinet last time. That was a very small margin. But I think at the end of the day, one way we should be guided is by the expressed will of the people of the state. And it does not seem to me that saying that that will, as expressed in votes across the state, constitutes the same as intent to favor a political party. I think that it's relevant to, so to speak, the facts on the ground. And it is our responsibility to look at those facts on the ground and to look at the expressed will of the people. So I'm just putting out way in advance, I hope that we will not only have the extremely fair process that you've described, Mr. Chair, which I believe in, but at the end of the day, I'm going to be looking at what our results are and hoping that we are up to the task, all of us, up to the task of providing the people of this state a map that fairly expresses their political will as they've demonstrated it when they've cast their votes in repeated elections, again, pointing out that every one of those I've talked about was won by the Republican candidate. So I wanted to put that out. I think it's a worthwhile criteria. I may be wrong, but it's what I believe, and I greatly appreciate your giving me the opportunity to express that, Mr. Chair. So thank you, and thank the staff, and thank the members. And
thank you, Ranking Member Geller. I apologize, I forgot to give you a couple minutes there. One thing, though, I think has to be said now is, members, be very careful, because the last expression of the voters is incorporated into the law, which we intend to be compliant with. To the extent that you are considering things outside of that law, just be very careful, because you can very easily trip over one of those lines that you may not cross. And so my promise to you was the same that I made to Representative Geller. We will do this right. The Speaker expects that this committee will do it right. I expect that each of you will do this right, but we will do this right and within the law. And with that, Representative Fine moves that we rise. Unless there's an objection upon motion of Representative Fine, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.